So translation. Therefore, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. Srila Prabhupada's purport. If realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life, it must be carried out by all means. In any one of the above-mentioned castes and orders of life, the four processes, namely glorifying, hearing, remembering, and worshipping, are general occupations. What are those four occupations? Okay, one more we missed out. Glorifying, remembering, worshipping, and hearing. Yes, very good. Without these principles of life, no one can exist. Activities of the living being involve engagements in these four principles of life. Especially in modern society, all activities are more or less dependent on hearing and glorifying. Any man from any social status becomes a well-known man in human society within a very short time if he is simply glorified, truly or falsely, in the daily newspapers. Sometimes political leaders of a particular party are also advertised by newspaper propaganda, and by such a method of glorification, an insignificant man becomes an important man within no time. But such propaganda by false glorification of an unqualified person cannot bring about any good, either for the particular man or for the society. There may be some temporary reactions to such propaganda, but there are no permanent effects. Therefore, such activities are a waste of time. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us. We have broadly discussed this fact from the beginning of the Janmadyasya Shloka of this Bhagavatam. The tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. Hare Krishna. So the verse again, therefore with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So these instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam are very helpful. Particularly this chapter is one that in Srila Prabhupada's prayer, that his poem that he wrote on coming to the West, so many verses from this very important chapter are quoted and included in his poem. So you may think, well, that's called plagiarization, plagiarism, if you take somebody else's work and include it in your own poem. But actually, in Vaishnava practice, that is the height of offering respect by including the prayers and with full reference to the statements of previous acharyas and the shastras. That makes one's work actually qualified if it is completely in line with the statements of shastra and the works of predecessor acharyas. That is actually proper for Vaishnavas to present things exactly in accordance with the principles and statements of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and the predecessor acharyas. So, for example, in Krishna's Bhagavad Gita as well, who can think of a verse that is very much similar to this verse for Bhagavad Gita? What's that? Mm, Yes, that's kind of similar. I was thinking of one which is mentioned more or less twice in Bhagavad Gita. Say? And the meaning? Obeisances, yes. Yes, homage, yes. So, worship, glorify, remember, that is manmana, remembering always Krishna. Krishna is saying, engage your mind always in thinking of me. This is real dhyana or meditation. Meditation means focusing the activities of the mind on the Supreme Lord. So, remembering Krishna, this is the simple program. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu, or Krishna. To hear about, chant and glorify, and remember always Krishna. This is the practical program. Very simple program, actually. Because in previous ages, it was a lot tougher. Something like yoga practice, which is a bit of a joke in modern terms, at least the way that the yoga is presented. Actually, the real yoga means to link with the Supreme Lord. Without linking with the Supreme Lord, the yoga, so-called yoga of the modern age, is simply a joke. Because what is the purpose of it? Simply to develop the bodily condition. But actual spiritual realization, it depends on advancing in one's consciousness of the Supreme Lord. As Srila Prabhupada has explained in various purports in the same chapter leading up to today's verse, Prabhupada has explained that there are four kinds of living beings. There are the karmis, there are the jnanis, there are the yogis, and the bhaktas. The karmis are materialists, but those who are actually yogis, they are focusing on different aspects of the personality of Godhead, which is described by Srila Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami a few verses earlier. What is that verse? Where it is described how learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth understand that absolute truth in three phases: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So the jnanis, they're focusing on the Brahman aspect of the absolute truth. And the yogis are focusing on the supersoul aspect. But the bhaktas, they focus on the fountainhead of all the other aspects of the absolute truth, knowing very clearly that this is Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam delineates specifically not just Vishnu or the different avatars, but actually Krishna himself as being the origin of all incarnations. What is that? Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So this is not a matter of personal preference. That personal preference should be utilized for understanding the truth. Sometimes it's said that science means pursuit of the truth. Although we see that nowadays people are more interested in knowing their theories than actually getting down to understanding the truth. So it's not really very solid material science when there is an unwillingness to examine the Vedic evidence. Because by ignoring huge bodies of evidence, how can you expect to come to a proper conclusion if you ignore most of the evidence and you've already decided dogmatically that we know the truth and our latest theories are the truth? This is actually not truthful. This is cheating. That's a fact. And Prabhupada was at great pains to teach us to understand these principles very clearly and to teach us to challenge such rascaldom which present that matter is the cause of everything. So we've been having discussions at some of our Namahata groups about how this tendency to try to cover the truth with so many misinterpretations has become very prominent. And we have a very nice book called The Nectar of Instruction. And of course, ISIS have a very nice program called The Nectar of Destruction. But our principle is actually to understand that we can learn something from everything. And in fact, we can learn from this principle of the terrorists a great deal. We can learn three very powerful lessons from the terrorists. Not to go blowing people up, but actually to understand that whenever you've got a big bang, there's always someone behind it. And the government spend enormous amounts of effort and money and energy to establish who made that big bang. There was someone responsible for that big bang, is it not? And they go to the ends of the earth, and they go innumerable news broadcasts again and again and again to try to get down to what happened and who might have been behind it. But there's always a person behind that big bang. But the materialist big bang is very different, because their big bang is not creating something beautiful and structured and organized and wonderful. Their big bang is just creating a mess. To create something actually wonderful requires good intelligence. It requires nice brain. It requires a sense of order and balance to create a wonderful situation like the universe and everything in it that works very nicely, like a perfect machine, actually. So that's one lesson, that behind the Big Bang there's always a person, and also that a Big Bang on its own just makes a mess. But a third thing, which also illustrates the nonsense and the rascaldom of these modern so-called scientific presentations, is that whenever you've got a big bang, they want to go into great detail as who put the explosive materials there. Did they just happen, or they just happened to be there? No, somebody must have put those explosive materials there. So who is that person who's responsible? They want to stick very obstinately to their Big Bang theory, so then we can challenge. Somebody started that Big Bang, and somebody put the explosive materials there to explode. Otherwise, how there could be an explosion? Is it not? Is it reasonable? And yet we're being accepted, we're asked to accept this idea that there is nothing behind the material creation. We're being asked to accept that there is no personality. Because this impersonalist presentation of modern life, which is so prevalent in the world, nirvisesha sunyavadi pasyata desha tarine, is pervading all aspects of people's lives. This impersonalism, that there is no God, that everything is happening by chance, that is simply impersonalism. Blatant, stubborn obstinacy to accept the personality of Godhead behind the creation. So we challenge. We put our boot in their face, as Prabhupada would say, very strongly. And actually we have to learn to understand these principles if we're going to preach effectively, to show people that actually you are following like sheep, working hard, frothing at the mouth like madmen, working from 9 to 5 for some materialistic occupation with no time to stop and actually hear transcendental knowledge, understanding about who we are and what we are, what this human life is actually a chance to do, what this human life is actually meant for, to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the devotees are working very hard to go out on the streets and meet people and try to find someone who is interested to hear about Krishna. That's pretty hard to find. And therefore, the devotees, they have to work rather harder because they have to work to try to create an interest in that person so that there is some willingness to hear. Not necessarily an interest to hear, but at least some willingness that let me try to hear this and encourage that person to make a little sacrifice on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to part with some of their hard-earned cash. And actually then they can consider, well, I've spent good money for this thing, so I might as well read it and see what's inside of it. Because unfortunately people are very unwilling generally to find out about Krishna. So the devotee's job may be seeming like a thankless task, but of course it's very inspiring when you find someone who's actually grateful for one of these literatures and is eager to take it and won't let go of it and insists on giving you some Lakshmi for it. If only. But it happens sometimes. So the principle is that after hearing about Krishna, things need to change. If they don't change, if it's simply gone in one ear and come out of the other, then you may wonder, you know, that person is going to benefit only very, very slowly. But if someone hears these messages of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, all these transcendental literatures that the devotees are trying to share with the people in general, then there must be some change. What has to change? The heart, yes. The heart has to change. That, oh, rather than shutting out the idea of the personality of Godhead, that's an interesting idea. My sweet Lord, interesting idea. What about this sweet Lord who is very kindly providing all facilities for us at every stage of our lives? Every stage of our lives. Think about it. Sometimes people will complain and say, what has God ever done for me? Well, apart from providing you with a planet to live on, and apart from giving you a body, and apart from providing you with food and the ability to digest it, and water to drink and cleanse yourself, and air to breathe, and the ability to digest the food, the sunlight and the moonlight so you can see all the things that you want to enjoy, and warmth, the light of the sun to keep you warm in this cold, dark place. Because when the sun is a long way away, we experience so many people are sitting here with hats and scarves. So apart from that, what's Krishna ever done for us? Apart from also accompanying us through every life, on whatever planet we've taken birth on, in every species that we've ever been born in, and facilitated our desires, and provided us with the results, the fruits of our actions that we so much wanted, and that's called karma. Apart from that, what's Krishna ever done for us? So, intelligent persons, they hear about Krishna and start to understand that actually Krishna is very kind and merciful, and he's very grateful to his devotees and very willing to give us not only everything we require, all the necessities of life, but he's actually willing to give us access to return home if we want to. He's very eager. In fact, Krishna is so keen to give us that access that he comes personally to share that information if we just somehow or other become fortunate enough to hear what Krishna is saying to us by the good fortune of contacting a devotee. Then we get the chance to understand what we are and who we are. Because without that, nobody knows. Nobody knows what we are. Nobody knows who we are. Nobody knows about Krishna. nobody knows about our relationship with Krishna. So the devotees are also very, very kind, because they also want to give people the chance to hear about Krishna. And when we hear about Krishna, then actually if we hear, then we can start to appreciate about Krishna. Oh, Krishna, he's quite surprising, and he's wonderful, and who is this person, and what sort of activities does he have, and where does he live? And we start to find out so many things about Krishna, and we start to appreciate him more and more. And as we understand from this chapter in Divinity and Divine Service, we actually become not just willing to hear, and not even just interested. Maybe I'll hear something about him, you know, but actually eager to hear about Krishna. This is a symptom that this hearing program is taking effect, that the intelligence is being stirred and awakened, that we can actually understand, yes, actually, my human life has some purpose. It has some meaning. It's an opportunity. It's an incredible opportunity that's so hard-earned after billions of births in the material world, that now I've got a chance to hear about Krishna. So this opportunity comes, and we see that the recommendation of the Bhagavatam is being very systematically presented, just like you see the very first word of this shloka, tasmad, therefore, systematically. So we're learning, what is the therefore about? There are so many therefores which are being discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Practically you go through the second and third chapters, and you go right through the whole Bhagavad Gita, and everything is being systematically presented so that one can understand. Just like you go to school, they don't start you off with advanced mathematics, but they start you off with the basics, and therefore you can understand this, and therefore you can understand that, and you can understand that, you know, it's not just a matter of 1, 2, 3, and that's done, you know, but actually how to utilize that knowledge and those principles to good effect. So similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us the opportunity to utilize this transcendental knowledge to good effect and taking us through step by step. So for example, in text 10 of this chapter, we get some information which is actually actionable information. All this Bhagavatam is actionable information. Here, for example, in text 10, life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So this actionable information which we're getting from Bhagavatam is meant for revolutionizing our lives. And not just our lives, as Prabhupada writes in the beginning, the opening introduction to the Bhagavatam. It's either the introduction or the preface, where Prabhupada explains that this incredibly powerful knowledge, this subject matter of Bhagavatam, is being presented for one's own upliftment and enlightenment, but over and above that, it is meant so that one becomes capable of convincing others about the supreme goal of life and the origin of all our existence and our relationship with that original person. So it is meant for enabling us to preach, actually. So you may say, well, not sure about preaching to other people, that's a bit of a dirty word. But actually it's a very nice word, because preaching actually means to share the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the benefit of all, and to help others get out of the darkness of ignorance and suffering. Prabhupada, he taught us that when we're distributing these literatures, that we may have so many different lines that we come up with. But in the end, he said, better you try to help people understand that please take this book. It will save you from so much suffering, so many miseries. And that is the fact. The miseries of repeated birth and death. Threefold miseries, which naturally the devotees discover that by becoming absorbed in this subject matter and by absorbed in this engagement in devotional service to Krishna, that these material miseries become really practically non-existent. They become so insignificant that the devotees go out in the freezing cold. They go out and bare their souls to the world and actually try to share this nectarine message of Krishna in all kinds of conditions. That is the fact. So, and not just in this life for a few brief moments while we're on the streets or wherever we happen to be trying to share with people, whether it's on a one-to-one situation. But we're actually trying to generate in other living beings, as well as ourselves, which is actually the purpose of regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, which is also being discussed in this chapter, that what is that statement? That it's described here in this chapter that not only questions of this sort are completely capable of satisfying the self, but it's described that by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed. So if we're trying to advance in devotional service, then we can understand that as we actually start the clearing process, yes, there are a lot of inauspicious things in my heart. Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. As we start the clearing process of devotional service, by hearing about Krishna, actually, we can come to see Krishna, but without hearing about Krishna, how will we understand who are these wonderful personalities before us on the altar? That hearing is essential. And as we start that program, it's just like when you start cleaning a room and you really get into it, then you start discovering, this is a bit of a mess. I'm going to have to do some serious work on this. It's going to take me a bit longer than I originally thought. It's just a quick dust. No, it's going to take some actual serious cleansing. But the wonderful nature of Srimad Bhagavatam is that the process is so nice that Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma also, the super soul within the heart, he personally helps the process by from within cleansing the heart of the devotee who relishes hearing his messages. So becoming eager and enthusiastic and joyfully hearing Krishna's messages is very much an essential part of the process of reviving our Krishna consciousness, of cleansing from within the heart, because Krishna personally takes up that task, and it's not as daunting as it might first appear, or as it might later appear when we actually start trying to clean up our hearts. So these principles are being described in this chapter. We've discussed about how learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth describe this absolute in three phases of understanding. And these messages are meant for our illumination, for clarifying everything very nicely. So we were given the example about how this actionable information is there. So the hints keep coming one after another from the messages of Bhagavatam, like this one in text 12. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from Vedanta Shruti. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada has discussed in these purports, is the illuminating the cream of Vedic knowledge. The cream of Veda, all the Vedic knowledge, is the Vedanta. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is a supplementary work to help us understand the Vedanta. Because Srila Vyasadeva, when he wrote Vedanta and all the Vedas, he could understand that people will misinterpret this in so many ways. Although he's presented the cream of all Vedic knowledge in the Vedanta Shruti, the Vedanta Sutra, still, he could understand they're going to get the wrong end of the stick. And he was also feeling himself that, what have I done? I haven't become satisfied by presenting all the four Vedas, all the supplementary literatures, the Mahabharat, which itself is like 100,000 verses. You know, massive work. But he's still feeling undone. So he asks his Guru Maharaj, what should I do to resolve this situation? And Narada Muni, of course, he advises him, please, you compile the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this will spell out very specifically what is the nature of devotional service, which can satisfy all men. It can be satisfying even to the totally ignorant, and it can be satisfying even to the self-realized liberated souls. It's so powerful. So this subject matter is presented very carefully, and we can also present this subject matter very carefully for our own understanding, because when we speak Srimad Bhagavatam, when we speak this transcendental nectar, then inevitably we get so many realizations. We see that the process of both hearing and speaking about is equally illuminating. As we see that both Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, one by hearing and one by speaking, became completely perfect. So we shouldn't neglect the opportunity to share this Krishna Katha with others. And that will also enhance our program for perfection by sharing Krishna Katha. Because here it's being advised in this verse that this whole principle is whatever caste, division, or order of life one is in, if one glorifies Krishna, then this is actually the duty that is being strongly recommended in this verse. That, let's just get that one more time, but then we'll go for some questions if anybody wants to ask. Therefore, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So these things, there is so much to discuss, and I will talk a little bit about Devananda Pandit.